Welcome to the Meditation Podcast. You can find all our episodes on meditationpodcast.org. We're also on BitChute and YouTube. You'll find the links in the podcast description. I'm also a podcasting coach, as I've got 4 other podcasts. You'll find everything about me and my social media on bio.link/podcaster. Today, my guest, looking forward to this, because one fellow podcaster I always enjoy talking to, podcaster, he's PR and booking agency for helping people get on shows as well, which is always great, and I'm collaborating with, so I'm very professional at that. Previously associate publisher and VP of Hemisphere newspaper in 16 countries, but was a professor, but not in one university. He couldn't just do one, he had to do 3. Couldn't do an MBA, he had to do 2, and couldn't be on the television once, he had to be on it 50 times. Please welcome Joseph Schinwald.
Perfect. Yeah. Perfect. Hello, Roy. Roy, it's such a privilege to be here. And I really was looking forward to our conversation today.
Yeah, no, I'm looking forward to it myself. I suppose, I mean, I've mentioned some of the things, but you might just let the listeners know. Who's Joseph?
Who's Joseph? It's quite a long story, like for everyone mostly. But I have been, I'm from Austria. I studied in Austria. And I left Austria also for 30 years. So who, you know, who is Joseph? That's the big question in meditation. Who am I, right? So I went to India 2 years, and I studied divinity in upstate New York and was surrounded by many beautiful spiritual bookstores, got into the habit to read books on Zen and Chuang Tzu and all this Chinese and Buddhist and Hindu little books, you know, about wisdom. I saw it always when I receive something from those books that I can actually gain wisdom also, and that I can incorporate it. There are certain notions in Buddhism or Hinduism or Taoism, which I fell completely in love with, where I say, wow, this was such a great wisdom for my life. So then after I studied, After I studied, after I came back from India, I was kind of a little bit confused. All my spirituality, I don't know what, but it is really based on spiritual experiences. Not that I had many, but I had some really extreme ones. Like when you have one, it's always kind of out of the ordinary, right? So yeah, when I came back from India, before I went to India, when I came back from South America, where I was also almost a year traveling after high school. And so there I studied the Upanishads. It's one scripture from, it's included in the Vedas. It's one of the main philosophical scriptures of Hinduism, right? There is the Mahabharata, the epic, then there is the poems, and then there's the Upanishads. And these are sayings of sages, of yogis. And the whole thing starts out, nobody knows anything. Not even those sages and yogis, they don't know anything. Nobody knows anything. However, it's becoming interesting when you read it, because there are these beautiful verses. And I read this one verse where it said, God is in every sentient being, and every sentient being isn't God. So I read this relaxed in the garden, and then at night I go to bed, and I just... like, you know, this, I don't know, it's like, you can compare it with the Bhagavad Gita, with Arjuna, you know, when he was shown by Krishna, the whole universe, right, how it works. Mine was much smaller, it was a mini version, but it was, for me, it was huge. So I went out there in the universe, and what is the essence? The essence was that I saw again up there, in their metaphysical form, which looks just like we somehow. I saw people like you, Roy. Maybe you were there, I don't know. There were others. And it was one message. It was a resounding message. It was, I looked in their eyes, and they looked in my eyes, and we all said, it's me. It's me. It's me. So I was wondering afterwards, you know, I need to know what that me is, right? You know, more about it. So that's why my topic today is about meditation. And what it is actually, right? And how it relates to certain religions, or if we in our Judeo-Christian Islamic tradition can even say that we do any sort of meditation. because our scripture is very much inviting us to contemplate on those, right? And you're not getting rid of everything, like to come to, like you peel the onion, right? And you come to your universal self at the end, because everything else is illusion, all these egos. So that is the thing in our culture, and I love both sides, okay? In our culture, it's just more contemplation. And I tend also very much towards contemplation. I contemplate even on Hindu, Buddhist, or Taoist little books, you know. It's contemplation is fantastic because I have to recognize that even if I just meditate, it's beautiful to experience the void and to get in touch with some fearlessness and timelessness, you know, in our world where our dimension is completely run by those emotions and those, I wouldn't say misperceptions, and our world, time and stuff is real, but it's a different dimension. And then there is the other one inside of us, which is timeless. It's a beautiful thing. And there is no future, no past, and it's just like here and the now. So that is my introduction to who I am. I mean, it's like a continuous discovery. And it's not just that I want to be mindful of my universal self, but also of my personality here in this world, because I run my business with my personality. You know, I know that I can only become happy in this world when I follow my intentions, my desires. They come from my personalities. Probably they come ultimately from the higher self, something I wanted to experience in this world. However, I like to see my mindfulness not so much on when I walk on the steps I take, but rather on who is taking those steps. You know, who is this guy? How does it relate with the mountains? You know, and because here I live in Mallorca, I do a lot of walking, and there are the mountains, and then there is the sea. And sometimes I go 2 hours to the sea in the mountains. Mallorca is a little island in Spain, right? And for those who are far away, and I must say, you're always conscious of your breath, of your breathing when you walk, and so it does bring you very closer to yourself, of course, when you walk. You also first see also the nature and everything, and it implies, the outside implies the inside. So even if you see the most beautiful thing, have the most magic moment, you can still honor yourself for being able to experience it. Again, mindfulness of your higher self. And yeah, I think I didn't lose anything out. It's I'm still very much interested in new experiences.
Beautiful. And I love the way you've kind of studied all of them, because sometimes people, they go down one route, whether it's Christianity or Buddhism or whatever, and they try to isolate the rest instead of kind of investigating everything. And I think that's the best way, because I think all of these different things that were created, they all have kind of the same message, but they were just, you know, it's, the wording is different, and how the thought process and everything, and just to extract the beauty from each one is big.
Yes, Roy, I completely agree, and I couldn't have said it better. I think it's not just that, you know, you box yourself in when you go deep in a religion, you are really reaching also the root again. In other words, you become universal again. So I'm not saying that somebody who says, I am Buddhist or I am Christian, that they cannot reach that universal root where they reach out, wow, you know, they understand spirituality. However, you know, many times we have those barriers, terrible barriers, the most terrible barriers at all among religions. And it's simple, stupid stuff, right? And then what I think is, what fascinates me is that I can learn from all of them, and then I don't have to allow anybody to put the label on me. Like, Joseph is a Buddhist. When I started my divinity in upstate New York 5 years, people called me in that seminary the resident Buddhist, but only because I had interest in Buddhism, right? And then I lost all these labels. I don't consider myself anything, really. It doesn't matter, because as soon as you label, allow them to label you. And what happens? A label is a word. And so is also the differences in religions, honestly speaking. You know, I mean, when you are going to some really questions which have been always on humankind's mind, like which, who am I, what is good and evil, all these things, and you start discussing and learning from each other, you're always coming to words at the end which are ambiguous. So first you try to define it so you understand each other better. And then, of course, we have to understand each other's reference. Who are we, right? We defined what we think God is or who God is. So now we can, we don't have to argue because now, okay, I understand, I think differently. I see it from there, you see it from here. That's perfectly fine. And when we still continue talking because it's interesting, then the words become very ambiguous. And so when you go, for instance, into Chinese at the Tao Te Ching, that is purely, the whole thing is purely ambiguous, and they wanted it that way. The language is ambiguous. The Chinese language is ambiguous. They wanted it that way. I can imagine, because we tend, as humans, we tend to fixate on words. It's like we are, like I'm walking in the beautiful mountains surrounding here, Mallorca, the island, and I studied a map on the internet. I want to go for a new route. And I stay with the map all the time. I never go, actually. And I imagine, illusion, that I'm walking, actually. So we are, you know, when we talk, when we think, we're not aware that this is just a beautiful thing. It's a map. It's a map. We are basically able to create and make sense and create meaning. However, we have to drop the map when it comes to meditation. That is already meditation. That is already what it is, right? It's more about the territory. It's more about the actual experience, not so much anymore about the words. The words become meaningless then. The symbols become meaningless. It's only if you give it meaning again, but then you are again in a different dimension. So, yeah.
Beautiful. And like you went to India at a young age. So like going there for 2 years,
yes.
Like, I'd like to know your journey there, you know, exactly what you went through, because that's fascinating to just kind of go, yeah, I'm going to India.
Well, it's not the typical journey, I tell you. And I'm always a little bit afraid to talk about it publicly, but I will. It doesn't matter anymore. I'm now, you know, at an age where everything is nice. I can sometimes talk about things I never talked about much. So, yeah, I went to India because I had this spiritual experience. And it was based on the Upanishads, on a book from India, not on the Bible. So I said to myself, I need to figure this out. I want it again, first of all. I want it again and again and again. What is this? You know. So I went to India. And in India, I just completely deviated from everything. I went to the beach in Goa. Goa is the place where the hippies were. We talked about Hinduism then already on the beach. There were the bazaars, and there were the Hindus, and there were the Punjabis and the Kashmiris and the Buddhists. And we meditated at 4 o'clock in the morning after we had a huge chillum, you know, smoke. Then we meditated. That was serious stuff. My gosh, India, meditation with those guys, you know, and that kind of stoned also. So, yeah, it was like it brought me totally to the moment. It confronted me right away with all my fears, my demons, you know. And that was the beginning of meditation. But not the beginning. It was maybe already earlier, but just saying. Anyway, then what happens next? The wild stories in India. Meditation-wise, I have to relate it, right? And to religions. I just enjoyed 2 years where I rented a bazaar, a third, and I sold perfumes. First watches and then perfumes. So, and I bought from the hippies. I was actually nicely dressed. I had short hair. I bought from the hippies. And, well, I could have been a hippie also. I'm I love hippies, you know. I'm just saying, you know. And they had watches to sell, or they had Walkman to sell. So I was there also. Well, and then I got to know Viman, and that was also beautiful. And finally, I wanted to stay there forever, but I did come back after 2 years, but not very spiritual. I was not in any ashram, and I lost my way. But I was so confused when I was back in Austria, in Salzburg, where I was a tourist guide in like summer, I could make money. But I was so confused about everything that I needed to study it. that was the journey to my master's in divinity, where I didn't study what they studied, where I just was all around with the magazines about Buddhism and, you know, all those other things. I mean, all this Christianity was super interesting, but I wasn't going deep into it.
Yeah, fascinating. And with the, like, the publications and the TV shows, was that all kind of related to that, or totally different topics that you were doing, different things you were doing?
Yes, that was the thing, you know, because I was mainly concerned about who am I, my life. I was quite open. I was always open to anything. I'm still very open. It's just amazing. I can experience the next 3 months things I don't even know yet. But I know it somehow because I want it. But I believe in it, right? So I'm always open. And when I had my family, 3 kids, and while I studied the divinity, I had 2 businesses, small ones. But I wasn't doing really well economically at the end. It's no secret when you are too spiritual, you sometimes, you know, need the other side. You have to be in the middle, you know, you have to love both. And then I got an opportunity to start the chapter, local chapter of a newspaper in Honduras, the fifth most dangerous country in the world. And I went there, I needed the money. So I started, I had 30 employees. After how many years? After 3 years, I was promoted to the headquarters in Buenos Aires. So now I didn't have enough suits, nothing, because, you know, Buenos Aires. And they're the thing, I was in the headquarters, the general manager, and things changed. It gave me an incredible blow in self-confidence. And then at the university also, I had, you know, I just got into these circles, and then they invited me to be a guest speaker. I talked about, sorry, this was your question. I talked about business. I talked about balanced scorecard, which was new, and profit models, profit patterns. That was my expertise. Then they invited me to television about it. All in Buenos Aires. And I'm Austrian, and I have to speak Spanish all the time. That was fun.
Excellent. And, like, I suppose now, with the craziness that's going on in the world, you know, there's dark, light. I mean, for me, I personally don't let it in. I kind of, you know, I see it. I'm conscious of it, but I don't let it in. Mm-hmm. I just kind of, what you would advise people, because some people, they're living in fear based on, unfortunately, what the media is dictating to them.
Yes. No, I see it exactly the way you see it. I don't allow it in. I made a decision, you know. It's, you know, like Jesus said in the Gospel of Thomas. He said, the kingdom of God is not in the sky. Then the birds will be there before you. The kingdom of God is not in the ocean. Then the fish will be there before you. No, he said, it's inside of you and outside of you. So that is the fascinating thing in this Gnostic Gospel of Thomas, had Nag Hammadi library found in Egypt, 1945. So they found a lot of those documents, and I studied them, I liked it. And not all of them, but some. And so this one is a good one. The Gospel of Thomas has like 111 sayings. These are just sayings. There's no story about the drama. There's nothing in there, just sayings. And so for me, it's also, when he talks about the inside and the outside, it's inside of you and outside of you. Very important, both. The outside implies the inside, the outside. Ellen Watts, right? And famous philosopher. However, I realized at that moment when I read it, and it stayed with me, that the inside is subjective. So it's a subjective presence. And that's why when I say what happens outside, it's there, it's real. However, I don't have to let it in. I have to let it in a little bit, but I can immediately say, I'm the subject here in this world. This world is actually very beautiful. You just have to go back to yourself and learn how to live with yourself. Sometimes be alone or be around positive people. I feel also compassion and sorry when I see people getting so, like, drawn into problems. The world is a problem. Life is a problem. I am a problem. It's nonsense. And they spend so many days of their lives like this, right? No, it's much better to.
It's like there, because I'm conscious of so many people living the conversation and then just bringing in the negativity. Then they're thinking in the negativity. They're probably dreaming negative instead of actually, like, I believe we are in the heaven or the hell. It's the same place. And it's what you create. You actually put into your mind what you decide. So you go out and it's like, you look at, like, I'm the same. I love going for a walk. I love doing different things and just being present with nature, you know, just outside now in the garden. I love reading a book and just watching butterflies and just watching. I've got two wild cats. They won't come near me. They'll hiss at me, but I still feed them all the time. But I just love looking at them. I love watching them eating and then watching the birds coming close to them to try to eat the food from them. And everything is like that with me. You know, I'm never in the car, say, I never get upset. I'm just relaxed. Like 2 days ago, I was at the supermarket and something happened in front of me. Somebody had some issue and I just, it is what it is. I was totally present, just watching everything. The person in front of me started freaking out, grabbing their stuff and going to another one. The other person is cursing and swearing that's in front of them. And I never let that get to me. But the most people are like that. There's kind of a high percentage of people, whether it's in the car, whether it's at the supermarket or wherever you are, they're just looking for reasons to have anger come out of them instead of just chilling. I mean, if I'm going to be stuck in a traffic jam, I'll always have a book near me. I'm listening to a podcast. I'm enjoying life. I'm constantly enjoying life. I wish there was 100 hours in the day. There's not enough hours in the day for me.
Yeah, Roy, you are like subjective in your presence. That's good. And, you know, the thing is with that phenomena that you can actually live your life in a different dimension while the world goes crazy.
Yeah.
You know, it's like the more you go into the negative, what I would like to ask you is, so you also have winter time there, right, up there, and it's cold.
So it's like we're the autumn. So it's very similar to us.
No. When the winter comes, when the winter comes, then you probably enjoy your hot soup or your hot tea or being in the living room with the fireplace and looking outside.
Exactly. Looking into the fire, even just watching the fire burning is beautiful.
And for me, the negativity is the same. You know, I don't have to freeze. But sometimes, you know, you go out quickly, you have to go in the car and open it or whatever it is, you might freeze a little bit. But most of the time, I am nice and comfortable. So that's the thing also, you know, with spirituality, like cold and hot. You can choose to be comfortable spiritual, right? Or you can be not mindful of how that is and let others drag you down. So, you can be compassionate with those, but all this. But at the same time, you have to also be careful. You have to also be aware. It's social awareness, right? But you have to also be aware of yourself. In other words, you have to protect yourself. I cannot hang out with them because I cry all the time and I think how miserable they are. I will be miserable like them in 1 week.
And like you're on an island, and I kind of tell people, like, you know, you're on an island and your bridges are to the different people. And sometimes you just have to remove that bridge, but new bridges will appear. And something, because I'm totally conscious of my energy. And if I see somebody is not serving me, I mean, we all look out for self, but you'll attract people then because people are drawn to your energy. But there is people that it's whatever, we don't know everyone's life journey, but if they're sucking your energy, like, Don't be afraid to, you know, some people think they have to stay. Oh, they're my lifetime friends. We're friends all our life. To me, that doesn't matter. You know, if they're not serving you, if it's something that's just extracting from you, remove it.
Exactly right. And it's like a little bit like love them from a distance, right? Like some people do with their relatives, right? They're not always the nicest people. Now, there is also there's this incredible wisdom of the story, the Chinese farmer, you know it for sure, that the equanimity is always, it's important to stay equanimity, to stay in equanimity, right? Like in that story, you know, when the...
You might tell it, because not I know it, but you might tell
exactly,
it, because everybody would.
It's a fun story.
Yeah.
I like to hear it often myself. So, you know, in China, there's this farmer and his horses run away. So all of the neighbors at night come to him and say, you poor fellow, you poor guy, you know, really sorry for you. I said, maybe. Next day, horses came back, right? Wow, happy, everybody happy. Neighbors come. Oh, you're happy. You must be so happy. He said, maybe. And then his son comes and he rides with a horse and breaks his leg. So they bring him back and all the neighbors come again. And then maybe he read the whole thing again. And then the army comes and recruits the young man the next day. And the son doesn't get recruited because his leg is broken. You see, that's equanimity. Life presents us all the time as this pendulum. And that's also applicable to the outside and the inside. So when I go out where I live, and, you know, some people might listen to it, but there it's a theater as well, you know. It's a small place, a village, lots of international people here. They own houses, they love this area, and they come frequently, like every 3 months for 3 months. So they know each other. And then there are people there all the time here. And all kinds of interesting variety of people. But there are some, it's a theater. Like Shakespeare says, you know? I mean, it's all a show, so to speak, all a theater, and we are mere actors. There he was, right. And that's typical Hindu, you know, the Leela, the divine game, the divine play. But one has to realize, I think, that there's a theater. People are doing theaters all the time. They play theaters. You know, a lot of people, you meet the honest conversations, the transparent conversations, or you just feel so great with another person. You just feel like, wow, this is immediately a friend or, you know, girlfriend, whatever, right? But the point is that most of the time, it's as you said, you feel the energies. And it's, if it's twisted, stay away from it, because you're just you, you know, you're not God. I mean, not that universal God, you know. It would be very, very much work to premeditate everything, you know, before one even talks.
Exactly. And like, I've been to a few events, and sometimes you can have people, whether they're the speaker, the organizers, whatever, given a persona of being such amazing people, and they can do the recording and everything. And when people go to this event, not everybody sees through it. I saw through very fast. But some people then get disillusioned and they don't want to go back. But I kind of looked at it differently. I'm meeting like-minded people and I become lifetime friends with the audience members, and I'm not really caring. I mean, they are sharing good information at times, but I mean, mm-hmm. It's more of a kind of extracting and manipulation, but by just extracting the best from a kind of mixed situation.
Yes. I love the metaphor. That's really the best simile that exists about, for me, to understand what's going on, which is originally from India. It's called Lord Indra's Net of Jewels. I wrote my thesis on it. That's why. And it's also used in Buddhism heavily in the Avatamsaka Sutra. It's heavily in there, everywhere. In Buddhism, and it's like our reality, who I am and what this is all about, is explained in a simile very easy. There is this huge net of jewels. Lord Indra put it up, and it's fascinating because each knot, the whole thing is also a jewel, right? But there are millions, billions of jewels inside, and they are all connected with each other and with the bigger one through jewels. In other words, there's one jewel, another jewel, another jewel, and they reflect each other's images ad infinitum. That's the metaphor. And you are one of those jewels, right? And I am one of those jewels. So you see, I'm coming from my spiritual experience again. That fascinated me so much, so I studied. So it's like, you know, you can't look outside only. You have to be aware when you look outside, that is a that is primarily a reflection within yourself. And then you don't experience the separation, the separateness, because you speak, you learn that you're reflecting everything else. All the selves, I mean trees and all the selves, right? They are all connected with you and you with them. You couldn't recognize a tree if you don't have it in yourself. Or look at your lungs, like a tree. And that is the best for me, the best analogy or simile for reality, because that's, it's like, you know, I'm not separated from this all. I'm so dependent on it all, like air, water, whatever, that I would be nothing without it, the sun, the mountains. I would be nothing. I am nothing, actually. I'm nothing. But at the same time, I'm everything, because it's the fractal existence we have. Like Rumi said, you're not a drop in the ocean, you're the ocean in a drop. And that is why meditation is, for me, to familiarize myself, like the Tibetans say, meditation is familiarizing yourself with yourself. So meditation for me is exactly that, to become mindful, to be mindful when I'm just thinking. So it goes into the territory and doesn't stay in the map. But we're all different, you see.
Oh, exactly. And to get the balance then, because like, I mean, I've experienced it myself in all different things, and I'm very successful in business and then going the opposite way, relationships the same and everything. Like, we're all trying to find balance. Is it, do you really think like a lot of it is within the intuition that we just have to kind of, instead of get the head out of the way and more listen to the body?
Yeah, I like the question. It's a fantastic question. I would say, you know, it's everybody's different. Why? I mean, look at Carl Jung. You know, he said, he spoke about different personalities. But if you go further in the past and you see the four kinds, the main types of yoga, and I would consider I'm like a Jnani yoga, which is more like a guy who is thinking metaphysically. For many, it's too much. And then I meditate to get it in my body, to get it in the present moment. And I like to understand things. I appreciate my intellect. But then there are those, they worship somebody, a god. Like in India, you have hundreds of possibilities. You choose the god who is like, to whom you feel a resonance, right? With whom you feel a resonance. Then in Christianity, it's Jesus. It's kind of the second yoga, which is the devotional yoga, bhakti. And then we have the karma yoga. A lot of people in the hospitals, right? I mean, they work and they serve and they do all these good things for other people. And then they have the scientific yoga, which is, you know, when it's written down in volumes, how to meditate, how to breathe, how to. So I think that in my case, it's like this phenomena that we have to accept that we are these different personalities. And then when you become mindful of your own personality, then you just know, I'm not the kind of person to become a doctor. I admire them. I studied 1 year medicine. I couldn't do it. I wanted to experience things outside. It was, so everybody is different. And that is the beautiful thing. We can learn so much from each other.
And with breath work, have you touched on that? Have you done much of because I've had different guests on and I've experienced a lot of different breath work. And just curious, your breath work journey, have you touched on it?
No, I will have to start with it. I was mainly interested when I had my e-commerce store. I went to Costa Rica and Nicaragua for 10 years, nice, beautiful beaches and all this. And I felt like there's more to life than just partying and going out and having fun. So I said to myself, let's give this a real serious try again to understand meditation. And so I went there and I tried the main four types of, there is only two in India and four Buddhists. Buddhist meditations. So I tried all of them to find the one I liked the most. So there is this self-inquiry, there is the mantra, and then in Buddhism, the Vipassana, the Metta, the four kinds, the Zen, and the mindfulness. So I tried it very well. I like all of them. I really like all of them. And I tried to incorporate it in my life. But the breathing, maybe it has to do with some vicious thing I have stopped and started and stopped and started, which is smoking.
And are you smoking at the moment?
Yeah, but not long anymore. I've so enough.
But
the cuff is from my, sorry.
A friend of mine, that I believe that that's why people find relaxation from smoking. They think it's actually the fag, but it's the fact that if you don't have a fag and just go, you're getting deep lung full of air into you, you know? Mm-hmm. And if you just done that without a cigarette, you'd actually get the same relaxing feeling. But, you know, so it's just a habit of trying to do that, pretend that you're smoking, and then get the same feeling and going, do I actually need the nicotine?
Yeah, but you have to have a very nice pull, so to speak, you know, inside. Yeah. Mine is wild in that direction. He does what he wants, you know. I still have to tame him. No, but I have, anyway. So that is one of the reasons. So, yeah.
And I think that's the thing as well. It's like, you know, sometimes people think that you get to a certain state of mindfulness, but we're constantly being tested. There's curveballs constantly thrown, and it's a case of how we react to them and what we do. It's not that we don't feel like, oh, I want to have a drink or I want to have this, whatever. Everybody's got some form of a vice, and it's just a case of how we react to it.
Yeah, I have to definitely get this in balance. But I'm doing very well in many areas of my life. So it was always my struggle, a little bit of addictions, my whole life. Got me into troubles.
So, like, just finally, what's your kind of daily routine regarding meditation? Is it more mindfulness that you're doing, or do you actually set aside a certain time, and what kind of, do you do a guided meditations or your own inner thought process?
There are times when I go like 4 or 5 times into meditation, but I'm the kind of the lazy guy. So I have a very nice bedroom, spiritual, so where I can relax, put the air conditioning on because it's quite hot here on the island, I sweat, you know. And then I start with my easy formula, and which is a formula of my understanding of what meditation is. And I usually never close my eyes without going through this formula first. That's my meditation. And I'm reaching my still point. I'm nobody, you know, I'm everything, but I'm nothing. And I like to focus on that darkness, the mystery of life, the inside, when I meditate. And it refreshes me. And there are two ways to practice meditation. One is you listen to it like music, or you play it like music. You don't listen to music and say, wow, I listen to music. When will this be finished, you know? So you just listen. And the meditation is the same thing. You open your ears, magic moments, right? In nature, you open your ears, let it in. Suddenly everything starts already changing. And I really love meditation, because for me, it's like either this music, or it is that you have an intention. Because I think from the Indian scripture also that we are born with our unique intentions. Just like I'm born in Austria, and I'm born at a certain time, and others are born different place, different time. We also have different desires in life. That gives us different experiences in life, which in turn makes us unique and interesting to each other. So the universe, for me, kind of the 6-7 billion people attracting itself through us. We are the universe. So, you know, I mean, it's just language. Sorry, it's now I lost it a little bit. So what was your the question?
Well, it was just more of your kind of process of your mindfulness and everything, which you've answered. And also, because you're a podcasting whore, is it Om by the Beach is the name?
Om by the Beach.
Yes, you might just tell people about that as well, because they might be interested in listening in on that.
Yes, well, you just have to, it's ombythebeach.com, the website, www, whatever. And if you put it in the show note, then it's fine. That would be the great thing. I have written several blog posts, which you might like.
I would love if you actually wrote a book based on what you've studied and your life experience, because I think it would be fascinating. So the blog might actually be able to compile it into a book, because it would be one that I would definitely get.
No, I don't think. I wrote two times a thesis, over 300 pages each, and the business one was good. The spirituality one was nonsense. I had no idea, but I would never tell it anybody, read it, you know. Yeah. No, I don't think I'm such a good writer, but I definitely have planned some really important, for me important, experiences. And I think I'm quite busy. I like experiences. I'm fascinated with experiences. I don't think I can achieve anything beyond myself, but I am still a little seed of a big tree. But it's me, you know, the big tree is also me. So I don't think I can really, we are here, I think, to have experiences. We're fascinated with it. So there's so much time, you know, and that's what I'm going to do. Writing a book, I don't have time for this.
Okay, fair enough. Listen, Joseph, thoroughly enjoyed our conversation. You might let people know where they can get in contact with you.
Yeah, on the on ombythebeach.com, ombythebeach.com, there is all the information to get in contact with me.
Okay, perfect. Thank you very much. I'll make sure I put it in both the audio and the video.
Okay, fantastic. Thank you, Roy. It's so nice to talk with you. I think it's just very light. You have the humor, you have the vibration. I could talk with you for a long time, you know, it's just nice.
No, totally. Yeah, totally enjoyed it. That's all for the Meditation Podcast. You'll find all our episodes on meditationpodcast.org. Sure to give us a thumbs up, 5-star rating, and a review. And also check out Joseph's podcast and do the same for him, because it really helps. It gets us higher up the charts. Until next week, take care.